The Packers' streak of four consecutive NFC North Division titles came to an end on Sunday when they lost to the Minnesota Vikings 20-13. That being said, they're headed to Washington in the first round of the playoffs. What's going to happen? We'll find out with 24/7 Sports Insider Luke Rogers coming up on Railbird Central next. But we're talking about a Green Bay Packers loss this morning to the Minnesota Vikings. 20-13, the Packers lose any chance of winning the NFC North Division. To break down that game, we have a guest joining us on the phone this morning.
Expert interview.
We have Luke Rogers, our 24/7 Sports Insider. You may know him as the brother of Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Mr. Luke Rogers, how you doing this morning?
Doing good, Brian. Thanks for having me again. It's nice to hear your voice here once in a while.
Yes, it's good to hear you too. I wish it could be under better circumstances. But Luke, tell me, after losing convincingly the previous week, should we have seen this coming with the Packers? Or was this a situation where they've got home field advantage with an opportunity to win the division title? What should we have expected?
Brian, at least from my opinion, I think we should have expected what we saw. I don't think this was a clunker or, you know, just a bad game necessarily by any means. I think what we're seeing here is the continuation of a pattern of a comedy of errors. You know, it's amazing to me that this team, in some ways, Brian, it's amazing to me this team won 10 games. It's there just seems to be so much dysfunction, especially on the offensive side of the ball. It just seems to be one mistake after another. I don't know from your standpoint. I mean, what was your expectation coming to the game? I know being a Packers fan as well. You know, I'm a Packers fan as well. 10 years invested in this team and. You and I watched the games from a standpoint, probably a little more analytical than most. Although I don't want to take any credit away from Packers fans. I think they, for the most part, they're the most sort of educated, up to snuff. They know their stuff as much as any fan base, if not more than any fan base. But you know, I know we watched it a little bit differently than most. What was your expectation going into the game? The Packers beat Minnesota, you know, soundly in Minnesota, and probably what is the best game the Packers have played in the second half of the season. But you know, coming off the games that they had come off, it just didn't. You know, I didn't have a whole lot of confidence, and I set the least for myself set the bar pretty low on my expectations for what the Packers are going to be able to do, especially the Vikings coming off their big blowout win of the Giants. They seem to be in a bit of a roll. This is their third win in a row. Brian, there's just a lot of things broken that I guess from a fan standpoint, we've seen this offense perform so well, even without Jordy Nelson the first six games of the year. But it's been so much of the same, just trotting out the offense, doing the same thing every week. If I had been asked to pick a game, I think I would have probably, from an objective and from my job standpoint as an insider, I would have picked the Vikings to win this game here at Lambeau, just because I got that little confidence in sort of the execution and the scheming of this Packer offense as it stands and status quo here.
It's interesting. I definitely have very little hope that the Packers are going to make any noise in the playoffs. Maybe they could come away with a victory at Washington. That wouldn't be out of the question. But beyond that, I think they have very little hope. But I guess I thought coming into this game, just knowing they beat this Minnesota team rather soundly at their place earlier in the season, I thought they could have came away with a victory. And I mean, the Packers were within one score. It's not like they got, you know, crushed by the Vikings or anything like that. Albeit it did take a late comeback. So they had a chance to win at least. But I'm there with you from the big picture perspective that things are not looking good for this Green Bay team. But Luke, if I would have told you before the season that the Packers would have lost all three games within the division at home, would you have believed me before the season?
Absolutely not. I mean, even sans Jordy Nelson. I think a lot of us fans, and even, you know, even the media, us working the media, wanted to write off the offense as woes. I think initially, you know, beginning that with the Broncos game to Jordy Nelson. And I think there is a lot to be said for what Jordy does in this offense, especially when plays break down and in the case of stretching the field. They haven't been able to replace that. I think, you know, when your best option when plays break down becomes Richard Rodgers, who's a fine player, great hands, doesn't move all that well. And he's your guy that's moving to get open when, you know, when Aaron's out of the pocket and the play's kind of broken down. You're in a tough spot. But I think what we're seeing, Ryan, is really, you know, there's not one simple answer. There's not just Jordy. I think the play calling for one and the scheming for one has kind of been exposed for its kind of lack of creativity and inability to adapt. I think this game against the Vikings is a perfect example. I think Mike McCarthy came out, you know, the Packers came out with a definite plan to run the ball to Eddie Lacy. They marched 70 yards down the field and then got to the red zone, which, you know, the red zone's been a huge problem for the Packers. And, of course, they stalled there and field goal. But, you know, minus that first drive, it's like everything went out the window. And it's back to, you know, let's pretend that we have the receivers playing like they did last year. And we're gonna run around and throw the ball.
Let's take a moment here, seeing as you brought it up, just for a second. Let's talk about the first drive of the game, which was rather creative play calling, going with these one wide receiver sets. They came out with two tight ends, two running backs, almost the entire drive, 15 plays long. What did you think of that? It was just so odd to see from this Packers team.
It appeared like Mike McCarthy was coming out saying it's 26 degrees out. We've got a back that we've kind of used, kind of haven't used. He was our bell cow back. He's a cold weather guy, a big guy. We're going to play our cold weather brand of football, which is going to be, you know, run, run, pass. And it works. It's like there's a plan. And then it moves the ball. But what happened? We didn't get back to that, you know, until almost the fourth quarter. To me, it's mind blowing. And it's also very interesting to see how, you know, and I don't know if it's a confidence level, and I don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes at all, but it's like the play calling script for the first, you know, 20 plays is there, and then when that's been used up, then it's just back to the same kind of vanilla play calling, vanilla stuff that we've seen all year that has worked and it has put this offense in the place that it is. Until, you know, just like it seems like every other game we've watched in the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 games, until they're behind and they need to move the ball, and then somehow something clicks enough for them to get some momentum at the end, but it ends up being too little too late, or there's a mistake like there was in the end zone on fourth down last night. And, I mean, there's a million things to unwrap in all this, but there's there's definitely an element of offensive design and play calling that's fallen short. It doesn't land on the coaches. There's obviously there's a lot of execution issues out there on the offensive line, execution with the quarterback. And then, Brian, I'd ask you, where and what does this offense hang its hat on this year, especially in the last 10 games? I mean, we see Eddie Lacy the first drive, and then I feel like we don't see Eddie Lacy till almost the end of the second quarter.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I don't understand that personnel. I don't understand that personnel move. And I like James Starks as much as anybody else does. But Eddie was fantastic the first drive, and then he's a ghost. Like he's not anywhere to be found. And to me, it's just like, where, how do you get yourself into an offensive rhythm, and how do you get yourself into any kind of continuity? When you take out the thing that was working, and we also know, and let's get back to this first drive. We also know that the Packers have been horrible in pass protection, and it's not all been blocking. Aaron's had the ball, too long on a lot of plays, and a lot of that also comes back to the fact that our receivers, aren't getting open. We can't put everything in that basket as well. Like I said, it's a mix of things, but the offensive line did well run blocking, and in a game that was at that point still very much in reach and not in a place where you had to throw the ball, the Packers then got away from that. And what happened? We saw our same three and outs. We saw the same sort of disappointing, Packer fans groaning and even booing in Lambeau kind of offense. And no Eddie Lacy. I mean, from someone from the outside looking in, I don't understand what's going on inside of that locker room or even inside of sort of the game planning within the game. The adjustments aren't there. And to me, just watching the game, the offense only began to click there at the end of the game when we went no huddle. And we stayed no huddle in the bunch formation. And as soon as we went away from the no huddle and they huddled and Mike switched the personnel, the offense stalled. And there's an element to that of rhythm. There's an element to that of play calling. And the no huddles go in Aaron's on the plays. Those aren't coming in from Mike. So take it for what it is. There's just a lot of broken things. I'm talking about sort of the design and the play calling here. And by all means, that isn't everything a player's play. Aaron's had a really weird year. He doesn't look like himself out there, to be honest. He hadn't played like himself. It seems like some of it is the pressure in the offensive line. Like he's taking his eyes off the downfield, which he didn't do last year and hasn't done in a long time. Looking at the pass rush, maybe leaving the pocket too early. I don't have an explanation or an answer for why that's happening, except that, Aaron looks like he's playing scared sometimes there. And he said that before, actually, in the Carolina game. He said that he was scared, which is just a weird thing to hear from Aaron in the first place. It's a myriad of things, Brian, and that's why my confidence was so low going into this game, and why my confidence is still so low moving forward, is that you have a defense that's playing well enough for you to win, for the Packers to win, for them, hold the Vikings at 20 points. You'd think last year, you'd think no problem, the Packers can put up 27, put up 30. That's not an issue. But this year we have a different story, and it's the offense is broken for, from loss of personnel, from lack of play, from play calling, from injuries on the offensive line. There's a million things, but you and I are pointing out a few things. Like you go bell cow to Eddie Lacy and kind of make Aaron a game manager in the first drive, and it works. They don't see it again. You don't see it again until they're down 20-3, and then it starts looking a little bit the same, and it doesn't work. Then it's baffling, I don't have a lot of confidence moving forward in the playoffs. I mean, Washington is probably the most favorable matchup you could pull in the NFC right now, playoff-wise. And yet they're a very, very good team at home. Kirk Cousins is a different quarterback at home. So now you deal with probably a better offense than you saw in Minnesota, in Washington, and probably not as good a defense. But, you're not playing in Lambeau. And I think we all expect and want the Packers to throw the switch on offense and expect this is going to be the game that doesn't look like we think they can look. And it just, I don't think it's going to happen this season.
What did you think of the choice before the game to put Josh Sitton at left tackle? Obviously, the Packers in a tough situation, difficult, knowing just hours before the game they would be without David Bakhtiari. So the Packers go and put their Pro Bowler, Pro Bowl left guard at left tackle. Obviously, he didn't play very well, but did the Packers have any other choice?
Brian, I don't really think they did. I don't think you can trot out Don Barclay out there again after the way he's played. You know, you take your best offensive lineman and Josh Sitton. You put him in your most important spot, even though he's playing out of position. And then you play Lane Taylor at guard. And, you know, I don't think they had a lot of options there. I don't think they had a whole lot of things they could have done. I don't think you can play Don Barclay at that position, considering his performance in the last few games. And, you know, you kind of do what you have to do. And I know that Bach looked pretty good in warmups. They still held him out. It's funny. I think David gets a lot of unfair criticism, and in sort of a microcosm of what we saw happen in Dallas with Tony Romo. You realize how good of a player and how important Bakhtiari is to the success of the Packers. You know, maybe you don't realize as much until he's not there.
I'm there with you. He's very good, and you hit the nail on the head with that one. For a guy, you know, people don't like it because he leads the team in penalties. Well, I think you live with the one penalty a game, which is probably on average, and you just take with it and you live with it, as opposed to, you know, giving up all the sacks like they have the past few weeks.
Yeah, and it's a, like I said, Brian, there's so many holes in this boat. It's not like you can find one thing and try to fix that and then hope this offense looks like it did last season or looks like it did in the previous, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. There's just a lot of elements, a lot of things going on here that you can't, you know, I just don't see being able to be fixed in, you know, over the course of, you know, a week here before the playoffs or even for the playoff run. You know, it's the same thing. Like we were saying, it's almost like the definition of insanity. I know I talked about this last month, but keep doing the same things, expecting different results, and you get the same results. And it seems like the staff is baffled they're getting the same results. But, I mean, look at last night. They're 2 of 15 on third down. That's been an issue all season for the Packers offense. And yet I didn't see much different. I did see a couple slant routes. I mean, what a revelation. Like the Packers have lived on the slant in the past. There was a bunch formation. I mean, there's a couple things that seem really elementary that happened once or twice last night and worked. And I'm thinking, like, you know what? You and I who watch football, anybody who watches football that doesn't even watch for a job, there's things, little things that can be done that just aren't being done. And then there's things that execution wise that should be simple things and that aren't being done. Like Aaron's accuracy, for whatever reason, especially the second half of the season, has just been kind of spotty. I don't know why that is. It's just a strange twilight zone, bizarro world, to see this, you know, this offense, this high-powered offense, you know, this team, kind of where they are. I mean, and I know we're spoiled as Packer fans because, you know, so many of us are complaining, and yet we're here in the playoffs, and you know, all these fan bases, you know, look at the Browns. I mean, they're going to have to hire their ninth coach in 17 years. It's just, I think, the expectation of excellence. And I think knowing how intelligent this fan base is and knowing the tools and the pieces this team has. I don't think we're wrong to expect more from this team. And then maybe that's where my concern is moving forward, is this season doesn't pan out. Like, you know, if they don't, you know, win the Super Bowl, which I think is the expectation for this team every year, you know, where do you start next year? I know he's got one more game, but I don't want to look. I don't want to look past it, but I want to kind of think about that. Is what do you do next? Like, you get the window closing on your, you know, not closing, but you have a window that is a closing window on your franchise quarterback. You've got your superstars, a few of your superstars locked up, and especially, what does this team, you know, in the short run, what does this team do this week to try to continue? And, you know, in the bigger picture, what is this next move for this team to be, you know, that 2010, 2011 Packer team? I mean, when the Super Bowl was won in 2010, right, there was expectation. You know, I can't remember how many conversations we had on how many this team would win. Was it, you know, two or three? Was this going to be the next dynasty? And I think they have the pieces for that. I think that's maybe why it's been maybe so baffling and also disappointing for a lot of Packer fans to see sort of the weird second half of the season and sort of the underachievement of this team. And I don't know what the answer is. And so, I mean, I hate to be a guy that brings up the, you know, the problem without a solution. I think there are a few solutions, and I think a lot of it lands on the coaching staff and what Ted and those guys decide to do, you know, with the play calling and with the staff, I think can change the direction of this team, moving forward. But, that again, I'm ahead of myself here as we still have one game left.
When we talk next month, we'll probably get into those things as we'll be looking forward to the NFL draft and what they can do there to add. But if we do address one kind of thing on the bright side here, that the defense, you know, they hold the Minnesota Vikings basically to 13 points because one touchdown came, you know, as a result of a fumble return for a touchdown on the Packers offense. And Clay Matthews, I thought, really, you know, for 2 weeks, he got a lot of attention for a guy who didn't make a single tackle. He kind of got back to doing what we've always known him to do. Well, was this a step in the right direction for him and the Packers defense as a whole?
I think it was. I think that is the silver lining in this game. And here again, Brian, here's my thing. I know that Dom doesn't have a whole lot of options because of how weak personnel-wise Packers are at the inside linebacker position. But, I mean, you've got one of the premier gifted pass rushers in the game in Clay Matthews. And, I mean, as much as you need him at this position, you know, at this point in this, you know, with this personnel to play inside linebacker, I think it's easy to see how wasted his talent is as a pass rusher when you keep him inside. I know it's one of those, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't things, because you need him in the middle to make plays. But you're right; he hadn't had two tackles. You know, he hadn't had a tackle in two games. But he starts getting moved around and ends up on the edge, and stuff starts happening. And this is, I mean, this is one of those questions, like, you know, is this staff putting these players in the best position to succeed? You know, and we saw how well Clay played, and that, you know, that was great that Dom got him on the edge and moved him around and got that going. But, you know, you can ask that same question to the offense. Are they, you know, is this staff putting these players in the best position to succeed? And you would have loved, and this is hindsight, is always 2020, Brian, but, you know, I go back to this last year, as the Packers set in the first round of the draft, and we took Demaryius Randall, who's been a fantastic player. But I believe in hindsight, we had all four middle linebackers, top four rated middle linebackers, still on the board at that point.
Including the guy they played last night.
Yes, exactly. Including the guy who played last night. And, you know, and we didn't address probably the most glaring problem we had. Packers let A.J. Hawk go because they feel like he wasn't the issue, and would have thought that letting A.J. go, that they had believed the guy behind him, whoever they decided that was going to be, was a better player and better option, and it wasn't. Your best option was to take your best pass rusher and then move him in the middle, kind of stymie his ability to do what he does best. So I really believe last year we probably could have gone and got, you know, Kendricks, Stephon Anthony, and Denzel Perryman, any of those guys that were available there, and fixed that knee in the middle, and still, I really believe, still got Demaryius Randall in the second round. that, of course, is, you know, I'm looking backwards. So I, you know, it's easy to be an armchair quarterback and not make the, you know, not make the calls and plays, you know, in the heat of the moment. But we're plugging holes again here, Brian, with, in this case on defense, with probably our best defensive player, and he's out of position. And then when you see him get moved to the outside, to the edge where he belongs, and I think it really was a coverage thing. I think it had to do with McKinnon being in there and them needing, like, Joe Thomas to run coverage, him being probably the fastest of the coverage linebackers and moving Clay to the outside to get some pressure. It seemed like more of a personnel need, but then you saw how effective he was when he's in his true position. And, yeah, I mean, the defense was great. Back to your question. Sorry, it was kind of a tangent, but that's your question. The defense played great. I mean, Micah Hyde might have had the interception of the year on his, you know, his backhanded interception. You know, they, for the most part, did a great job on Adrian Peterson. You're right, 13 points. And, you know, I think in that position, they got to make Teddy Bridgewater throw the ball, and they did that. And Teddy's, you know, hasn't had the best season passing. And the defense did its job. It held itself its part. And again, we're back to the broken offense where, you know, we haven't seen whatever the Packers are doing during the week. We haven't seen any of that translate to anything different on the field on Sunday. I think maybe that's the most disconcerting thing as a fan. And then, you know, you and I, our job sort of analyzing what, you know, what NFL teams do and what offenses do. And you especially being the Packer guy and me being a Packer fan watching this the week in and week out, like to trot out, the offense and seemingly try to do the same things and have them not work week in and week out or have it work. And then don't see Eddie Lacy until sometime in the third quarter. It just, I don't know what this offense wants to hang its hat on, because it looks like it's trying to be, you know, three different things inside of a game instead of trying to be one different thing or one thing and do it well. You know, if that makes any sense, it's like, I don't understand how Eddie has such a great series and then we don't see him. You don't feed him. It's mind blowing to me.
Yeah. I've thought all season long that James Starks is nice. He's a nice complimentary piece, but I think the Packers have to, Eddie Lacy has to be the back cow getting 2/3 of the carries and James Starks 1/3. And instead of this 50-50 split, the Packers got to use Eddie Lacy. You know, it was, I think the statistics, it was 7 carries that first series of the game, only 1 carry the entire rest of the half, and then only 5 carries the entire second half. So, yeah, it's baffling that they didn't use him more. And you know, you start establishing him, and that takes pressure off the passing game. That helps.
100%. The play-action pass then was fantastic on the first drive.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody bites on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not rocket science. This is not anything complicated. It's just amazing that, like, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what McCarthy in the offense are thinking, but it's Mike, the play calling, at least in this first half. Mike comes out, wants to establish the running. He says that over and bangs that drum over and over again in pregame, postgame. And then we look at our second series and that's out the window. It's a tough pill to swallow. And you know, it's,
I think, yeah, we're almost going in circles now coming back to it. Luke, as we look ahead here, so many people wondered if all along, you know, a loss would be in the Packers' best interest going to face Washington on the road in the wild card round. And I know you kind of alluded to this already. But you know, the Packers fans that thought that, they got their wish. What do you see happening next weekend? I know we're pretty far out here, but kind of a broad look.
The best part about this is the best part about Sunday was Seattle winning and basically the Packers avoiding Seattle True. You know, until a potential NFC, you know, championship game, you know, at CenturyLink there. But I mean, yeah, here's the thing, like, yeah, you get probably the most favorable matchup, you know, with the Redskins being, you know, having the worst record of any team in the NFC in the playoffs. And you're going, you know, you're going to play that team, but you know, I don't think anybody wants to back their way into the playoffs. And I kind of feel like this is, you know, when you lose your final game and you lose your NFC, you know, the NFC North title, you know, I don't think anybody on that team wanted to, you know, you don't want to lose a game. You don't want to go in the playoffs on a note like that. And, you know, and again, as we spoke about earlier, like, yeah, you know, as a Packer fan, you're getting the most winnable game, but you're going to have to win a lot of games that aren't, quote, winnable games if you're going to want to get what the Packers want to get, and that's the Super Bowl. That's what everybody plays for. So I think if you're a player, even if you're a Packer fan, I don't think you care who you play. You want to beat everybody because you got to beat everybody, you know, to get that prize. So I don't know. I think. You know, I think wishing for an easier game is a real short-sighted way to look at the playoffs, and it's a real lack of confidence in the ability for this team to make a run deep in the playoffs. At least that standpoint is. You know, I think you and I and Packer Nation included would love to see this offense flip the switch. I just think we've all been hoping that would happen every week. And it just hasn't, and that's probably been the most frustrating and sort of baffling thing for all of us is to not see what we're used to seeing on the field from this team, from Aaron, from Randall Cobb, you know, from Eddie, from Devontae Adams, from, you know, across the board. We're just not seeing what we've grown accustomed to seeing out of this team. And you know, I think it's a big cause for concern moving forward. And yeah, this is probably the most winnable game, like we said, against Washington. You know, but after that, say the Packers win that game. I mean, then you're most likely, I mean, you're for sure playing Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you, doesn't get any more difficult than the team that's only lost one game this season. You know, unless if you're playing the Seahawks, and the Seahawks are probably the hottest team in the NFC right now. So, yeah.
I will say, Brian, this. If for some reason the Packers could get hot, and I suppose this is maybe the route you want them to take against Washington, which is a winnable game, I'd almost rather play Carolina than Arizona at this point. So you got that. And with the Seahawks being hot, it just – I know this would take 5 zillion things to fall into place, but if it's Seattle and the Packers, that game is actually at Lambeau Field by virtue of Packers having the number 5
seed. Oh, you're right.
And the Seahawks having the number 6. As hard as that is to believe, the Packers get the home field advantage.
Oh, well, excuse me. Yeah, I was we are the 5 seed, yes.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah, and then, you know, I guess from that standpoint, if the Packers are going to get on a roll, you got to start with a W. And the easiest W, it would appear, at least on paper this weekend, would be in Washington. So if there is any silver lining to this loss and the losing the NFC North and all that, it's that you got to start somewhere to get on a roll. And if you're going to get on a roll, you might as well start to get on a roll against the Redskins. And, you know, let the chips fall as they may, I guess, as after that, you know, if they can get past Washington. But I don't, man, there isn't anybody that should be looking past Washington at this point. In the scope of things, it appears to be an easier matchup. But, you know, as you know, no NFL game is ever easy. Any team can beat any other team on any given Sunday. And especially when we just have just sort of seen a lack of, you know, of solutions during the week for the problems the Packers have faced, at least in the last, you know,
6 to 10 games. They've got to dig deep this week. They've got to make some changes in the way that they do things on the offensive side of the ball. I think in order to give themselves the opportunity to, to move forward in the playoffs.
And hopefully they get back David Bakhtiari for next week, and that'll help. I suppose it's a case of prepare for the worst, hope for the best, and we'll see what happens. Luke, thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's an interesting talk, as always, as we kind of give ourselves a therapy session here, I think. So.
Right? I feel like it is. it is. I mean, I know that, it really has. It's nice to let it all out. And I feel like sometimes it becomes a bit of, we do talk ourselves a little bit in circles. But I think it's because we come back to the same points. I think almost like every time we talk, and it's on a monthly basis, I wish we were talking about how some of these things have been fixed. But, maybe we will next month. I mean, who knows what this month brings? And, I am in some ways the eternal optimist that really hopes this switch can be flipped this week. And, we can see a team that, our team looking like our team out there on Sunday.
Yep. Next, the first Monday of February will be right around Super Bowl time. So we'll see what happens by then. But as always, Luke, good to talk to you. We'll see you again next month. And we'll hope for the best this upcoming Sunday.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Take care. Luke Rogers, the 24/7 Sports Insider here, joining us on Railbird Central on a Monday morning, recapping a Packers loss, unfortunately, to the Minnesota Vikings as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
The Green Bay Packers lose 20-13. They claim the number 5 seed in the NFC and go on the road to play Washington next Sunday. We talked for darn close to 40 minutes with Luke Rogers. I'm going to give you just a brief recap, as we always do, kind of the roadmap for analyzing a game as we look at the Chips report published at 24/7 Sports in the aftermath of every Packers game. And just to go through the players and what they looked like, the good and the bad, your blue chip performances from Sunday evening, our linebacker Clay Matthews, really, I thought, having his best game in weeks, especially from a pass rush perspective. He got out there and got pressure on Teddy Bridgewater and in a variety of ways. Again, the Packers lining up as much as they could on the edge and bringing pressure. And he gets his first sack in weeks, and which is great. And but even when he wasn't getting a sack, Clay Matthews was the one who set up Julius Peppers' sack. I mean, Clay Matthews grazed him, and then, Julius Peppers took him down. And Matthews, maybe he wasn't the greatest in the run game, although there was a few times where he got into the backfield there. And I know he made one nice tackle for a loss on Adrian Peterson, which was really good. I know there were a few times where those big offensive linemen got to the second level and just, when it's 300 pounds on 200 some 50 pounds or whatever, they push Matthews back a little bit. But it's unfortunate too that the Packers, they really had to rely on, they saw Jake Ryan getting exposed, really pretty poorly against the Arizona Cardinals and even before that. And the Packers saw they can't really have Jake Ryan out there a ton in passing situations, and instead had Matthews back there on a few occasions covering, backs, tight ends, things like that. And he's definitely, what are you going to do? No linebacker is great in coverage. Matthews is, I think okay at it, but he's definitely better than Jake Ryan. So the Packers, tried to work their way through that. Your other blue chip performer, Micah Hyde, with the highlight reel play of the game, the one-handed snag that he kind of backhanded. It was an amazing play. And just call Micah Hyde Mr. Turnover, because in addition to that, it was the other turnover that he ended up getting the fumble recovery on the kickoff, which we're going to get to in a second, because that's our other red chip performer coming up. But yeah, so Micah Hyde coming up with two turnovers for the Packers, in addition to, you know, a gritty performance coming back from injury. Remember, there was the one point where he had to leave the game due to an injury, came back, and he returned two punts for 15 yards. Nothing special there, but tried to get north and south at least, and did a pretty good job this game. So Micah Hyde, you know, when you're coming up with two turnovers in a game, that's definitely a good performance. One on defense, one on special teams. So kudos to him for a big game, basically the second game in a row for Micah Hyde. So coming on strong late. He's definitely got a knack for making plays. He's not the fastest guy, but he maximizes his ability, I think, and that's a good thing. Your red chip performers, Richard Rodgers, tight end Richard Rodgers. Here's another guy who maximizes his ability. It wasn't always pretty. Richard Rodgers still can't get yards after the catch, but he did do a good job getting north and south as much as he could on Sunday. He, of course, you know, had the big touchdown, that the Packers' only touchdown of the game, which was a big moment where he, you know, dove and crossed the plane of the end zone. He had the nice sideline toe-tapping catch. He had the fourth down conversion, the last drive of the game. There are points where, there was the third down play, the Packers' very last drive that, you know, I don't know. Do you even blame Richard Rodgers for that? He shouldn't have been probably getting the ball to the first place. So, they get the ball to him and the clock's running and they're running out of time. Again, I just don't know if I blame Richard Rodgers for that. He made the catch. He did what he could. He maximizes his ability, and even he threw a nice key block for Eddie Lacy on the fourth and one conversion. We're talking early in the game there, as far as run blocking goes. So yeah, Richard Rodgers has a good game. He was not part of the problem on Sunday. You wish that others would have stepped up around him, but he did a good job. And your other red chip performer, kicker Mason Crosby, who, just like Micah Hyde, has another highlight reel play, one of those SportsCenter top 10 moments, I guess. I don't know if it made it or not, but you know, all of a sudden the Packers pulled to within 7 points of the Minnesota Vikings in the fourth quarter, actually thanks to a Mason Crosby 43-yard field goal, so does a fine job there as well. But then on the kickoff, the Packers allow a 70-yard return, and you're like, oh no, just when they get within striking distance, this happens. And Mason Crosby, just like he's a safety out there, makes this perfect, you know, rakes his hands over the football just like you'd instruct any player to do. But he's the kicker, the one guy you don't expect to do it. And he forces the fumble and gives the Packers the football back. And unfortunately, I mean, they can't capitalize on these turnovers. Here we talk about the plays from Micah Hyde and Mason Crosby. But at least they're doing their part. They did a good job. So I give them kudos, and that's why they're in the blue and the red chip performer category here in the post game. As far as your cow chip performances, guard turned tackle Josh Sitton. I'm sorry, I feel bad because I don't. You know, what do you expect when you take a guard and you put him out at tackle? Josh Sitton's a guard. He's found his calling in the NFL as a guard and a Pro Bowl left guard and one of the best in the NFL. But I'm sorry. I mean, you sit there and you look at the game. Josh Sitton didn't look good, and it's not entirely his fault. But I mean, he couldn't handle Everson Griffin off the edge. He's the one who allowed the blindside hit to Rodgers was it the third or the fourth quarter? It was right at the end of the third quarter there that
you know, the fumble return for a touchdown. That was due to pressure off the edge. Josh Sitton has a penalty. He allows several sacks in the game, including one in the fourth quarter there on a third down, which the Packers have to settle for the field goal instead of the touchdown. It, again, unfortunate, but, you know, Josh Sitton isn't the answer at left half. He's the answer at left guard and a very good one. But, you know, all you can hope is David Bakhtiari is back there next week and the Packers can just get back to doing what they're doing, have been doing. And the Packers have to address, you know, the backup tackle situation. I mean, I sit there and you feel bad because, I mean, the Packers' starting offensive line, their starting five is fine, and they've got a pretty good backup center with J.C. Treader. It's tough to they don't have a backup tackle. And I don't think you go into the offseason and you think, well, tackle first round. The Packers don't need a starting tackle. What they do have to find is a good mid to late round tackle, which is tough to find, very tough to find, you know, because all the good guys come off the board already, all the athletes. And you're looking at guys who are, projects when you're talking the mid to late rounds. So you just hope and pray that David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga stay healthy, and hopefully that's the case next week with that. Your other cow chip performer, Aaron Rodgers. Again, I mean, you kind of feel a little bit bad because he's working for one behind a makeshift offensive line. He's working for two with a group of wide receivers that can't get open. But still, for whatever reason, it seemed like when Aaron Rodgers was throwing to James Jones, they hooked up on a couple very nice completions. In fact, James Jones had over 100 receiving yards on just four receptions. But James Jones was targeted 13 times. He had four receptions on 13 targets, and so many of them were the fault of actually Aaron, just overthrowing him, underthrowing him. The interception and the touchdown, I thought, was inexcusable. Even though Aaron was under pressure, he had to scramble around. It was a hope and a prayer that James could, you know, make a play instead of putting James in a position to make a play.
Packers news of the day.
Once again, sorry for the that happened. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers not, you know, doing well. It's been this way for, you know, pretty much since the bye week onward. The Packers quarterback has not had a passer rating over 100 in something like the last 10 games or something like that. It was a largely forgettable season, his worst season probably since maybe his first as a starter in the NFL. Maybe even worse than that. It's tough to quantify these things, but it's tough to put all the blame on him when there's certainly things falling around him. But Aaron Rodgers, a couch hit performer on last night, your final segment of the show.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Monday, the team has their press conference. Their head coach, Mike McCarthy, meets with the media starting at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Time, followed, as usual, by the team's coordinators, defensive coordinator Dom Capers, offensive coordinator Edgar Bennett, special teams coordinator Ron Zook. All starting at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Time and streaming live at Packers.com to see the aftermath, the fallout of a loss to the Minnesota Vikings. I don't think you're going to see them linger on this game too much because they got to look ahead to the playoffs. They'll linger on a loss when the last loss of the season occurs. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of, you know, trying to spin this as a positive. I mean, that just, you know, just moving on because they got bigger fish to fry. It's just the nature. I mean, if I was the head coach of the Packers, that's all you can do too, right? If I'm Mike McCarthy, you got to put it behind you in the rearview mirror and move on. I mean, that's all you can do. There's no sitting here, you know, when you've got the playoffs coming up, to sit here and you know, analyze what happened and what went wrong and how can we fix it. You just got to start preparing and putting your game plan together and how are you going to devise a game plan and attack weaknesses of the of Washington. So that's what you're looking at on a Monday morning, and that'll do it for today's show of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us on the show today as we break down a Packers loss, unfortunately, but hopefully we'll be talking about a win in due time here. We'll be back again on Wednesday. The next edition, as usual, we'll have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us on the show, and we'll see you then. My call to action, as usual, the one small thing we ask, if you would, we'd love it if you would put a rating on iTunes, a rating and a review. The show's free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. It's the one small thing that helps us get word out about the show, helps people find it, and makes, hopefully, makes the show better. So, sorry, folks. Sorry about the loss. We'll get over it together, and we'll see you on Wednesday. On behalf of everyone at 24/7 Sports, I'm Brian Kiriwoo. I leave you today with a song called Nemo by Umphrey's McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. We'll see you on Wednesday. Go, Pack, go.